So we all forgot about NFTs were a thing, right? Like NFTs are no longer a thing, except for people who got stuck holding NFTs and like who else has NFTs? Like people who have NFTs because they accidentally bought it and like are what they call bag holders, I think is the proper term. And like what else? Like I totally forgot NFTs existed until the NHL this week was like, hey, by the way, our NFTs are out.
Honestly, NFTs is completely out of my realm. I know we both prefer much prefer our nice Tim Hortons hockey cards that we are still not sponsored by Tim Hortons, even though we opened our packs every year. But yeah, I don't know. NFTs just don't really make sense to me. Like I don't really get it. Like it's like one of a kind, but it's digital, but you can sell it. I honestly I don't get the market in anything like that.
All I know is that if I look at Google search trends for the word NFT, they peaked in the week of January 23rd, 2022. And since then, there has been 1/20th of the volume of searches. How do you miss the boat that bad? Like, I'm assuming they probably had to take a little bit longer to, like, get legal and everything to sign off, but how do you miss it by that bad? And if you miss it by that bad, do you just like kind of just see the writing on the wall and go, you know, maybe just pretend this never happened? Because, like, let's be honest here, like, who's buying an NHL NFT? A, and is this not just a peak demonstration of how bad the NHL is at marketing their league?
Well, maybe they're trying to bring it back, you know. Maybe they're like, oh, we're going to be the trendsetter and we're going to restart NFTs again. I feel like the NBA must have done NFTs back then when it first started. I can't remember, but maybe the NHL is just trying to bring back the NFT. And I agree, like, it probably took a while to do licensing and legal and stuff, but I think, like, they were going to do it no matter what because, like, realistically, like, the cost of doing all of this, they're going to make profit off of it, is my assumption.
You think they're making profit? I don't think they're making profit off this. Dude, they're like, someone has to buy it still. Right? Someone's got to spend their money on it.
Yeah, but what's the cost of them making an NFT, right? Like, is that cost more than actually someone buying it? I mean, like, I feel like there's definitely going to be some hockey enthusiasts that would be willing to splash big money on, I don't know, like a Connor Bedard first goal NFT. I don't even know what NFTs are. I don't, like, would they get like a video of Bedard scoring his first goal? Like, I don't even know.
Okay, so like the NBA was the first one, major one, right? It was like, do you remember NBA Top Shop? Like that was pretty cool.
I vaguely remember it. But I've heard the word Top Shot.
So I'm on it right now. I'm on this NHL Breakaway. That's what the NFT market is called. And let's see, you can buy drops, trade, or play. So the active drop right now, you get a pack of six highlights. Okay. This is the preseason starter pack. Sorry, breakaway starter pack. You get six highlights for guess how much? And there is a total of 5,000 available packs.
And these highlights are all like individual, right? Like no, they're like one for one type of thing.
No, they don't say that. You could have, you know, like, so there are four of the six highlights are from their 2022-2023 set. And each of those highlights, there are 1,500 of them. So you could have number 761 of 1,500.
I'm gonna say for a box, like a pack of six highlights, I'm gonna
In
give you
US dollars, sorry, in US dollars.
let's just do a nice simple 99.99.
Holy crap, Jeffrey. What you look like? You look like, have you seen the meme of Bill Gates trying to guess the price of stuff? And he's like, I don't know what a banana costs for $10.
Well, it's the same, except it's the opposite. Like I don't buy NFTs, so I don't know how much an NFT would cost. What is the cost for a pack of 600?
Okay, so for our listeners who don't know what an NFT basically is, like, there's like, in the simplest terms, it's a GIF. It's a picture. It's a digital picture. I mean, then there's a whole bunch of like blockchain. I'm not gonna go there, but it's a GIF, right? It goes for $19 for 6 GIFs. And you know the worst part about this is?
What?
They've sold more than 2,000 of these.
I mean, it is the holiday season, so maybe this is good marketing. It's like right before the holiday season, maybe you know someone that is really into hockey, and you're like, oh, this is kind of unique. It's not a stocking stuffer, but it is, you know, something that you could probably put in someone's like Christmas or holiday gifts. And you know, $19.99 US dollars is not the worst present, and it's unique enough that I feel like, you know, someone's bound to like it. Maybe I don't know. Like, to me, like, I mean, I wouldn't buy it because I feel like these highlights I could probably just find on YouTube or somewhere else. But I mean, like, just the uniqueness of it all, maybe someone really cherishes it. It's just not between me and you, we probably don't cherish it as much as some other people.
Maybe I'm the out of touch one because they've got the rare pack, which is $65 for 5 highlights. And that is sold out. All 2,000 of them have sold out. Maybe I'm the out of touch one.
This honestly reminds me of Hockey Ultimate Team at this point. You're just spending money on packs for digital things that aren't even, they don't have monetary value in real. Well, this, I guess NFTs have monetary value, but it's very similar to me. Like, how does a highlight of either someone making a pass or hitting someone is going to be worth a certain dollar value? I still don't get that part.
Like, I would love to see the trend of traffic to their breakaway, NHLbreakaway.com. I don't know what it is. Like, apparently you can, like, play too. I don't even know. Maybe I'm not hip. I need to register for early access. But I see NBA. I see this follow NBA Top Shop. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, like, if the NBAs are kind of led the way, like, why reinvent the wheel? Like, if you're the NHL, just kind of take what they did well, incorporate some of your own uniqueness, and call it a day.
That's not what I meant. I meant by it will peak, and then as interest falls, it just gets worse and worse. So I'm on a random site called SimilarWeb. I was Googling this. It looks like they're, like, average, like, the amount of people going on it is, like, dropping like 60% like month over month. That's what I mean.
Well, I mean, if you're the NHL, then what you do, like you said, things are sold out. Maybe that's why if it's sold out, people aren't going to go on it. So like maybe they have to release new stuff like more frequently. So then that way they can increase traffic back onto their website, increase the interest into NHL breakaway or their NFTs. And then maybe they'll have more steady interest. I don't know. This, between me and you, this stuff is like way, way over. Not, I won't say we're too old for this, but we kind of are a little bit too old for this. Just, we're just on that margin right now, I think.
Are you going to cause me to have a midlife, quarter life crisis? Sorry.
As my friend likes to say, if we only make it to 60, this is a midlife crisis.
Can you like not? I am debating my own mortality right now, and as a result, I need a break, so we're going to start the show proper, shall we?
You're listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network.
And we are back. Before I go into the heavy-hitting topics, can we talk about how interesting of a career Frank Vatrano has? And what I mean by that is, how many players do you see for the career have more goals than they have assists? Maybe because you have the option of getting, you know, two players getting an assist and only one player of getting a goal listed in their stat column for every goal that goes in. But Frank Vatrano is one of those rare players that only one time in their NHL career do they have more assists than they have goals. When usually it's the other way around. You would expect to have more More assists than goals.
Can I name two players who I think might also be in that category? I haven't looked at their stats yet, but
I will look at it and I will look it up.
Okay. I want to say, I don't know about Alex Ovechkin, because I mean, like this is the these are the people that we normally think of, people, you know, just going to have more goals than assists. It's those pure goal scorers, right? Like Alex Ovechkin. Another name that popped into my head was Patrick Laine. And like, I mean, if you really want to go old school, I want to say Mike Bossy might be someone else that would, like, when you think of guys who just scored and, you know, like, I mean, Gretzky scored a whole bunch, right? But, like, you know, he was more of a playmaker. But, like, to me, like, I'm not surprised that, well, I'm surprised Frank Vachano is one of those players, but I'm not surprised that there are, that there are quite a few people that have more goals than assists. Like, some people are just don't pass the puck or, you know, just score all the time.
So what I can tell you is that you are correct on all three players. Alex Ovechkin has 826 goals, 670 assists. Patrick Laine has 200 goals and 182 assists. And Mike Bossy has 573 goals and 553 assists. Is Frank Vachano actually not as interesting of a specimen as I initially thought he was?
Well, I think about his career and like who he's played with. And he always seems to be, he's always been like that third player on a line. But he was always just in the right spot. He was always in the right spot at the right time. So that he always could, you know, get those goals. Like, I never thought of him as someone that drove his line, but he also wasn't like a playmaking type. So that he always was just finishing plays. So I'm not super duper surprised, but I'm not like, now that I come to think about it, when you kind of rationalize it, it's not the weirdest thing in the world.
I think it's weird because if you look at it, he has scored more than 10 goals. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, including the season. And he has scored more than 10 assists 3 times in his career.
But, I mean, like I don't know, like, just, like, when you watch him play, right? Like, the play doesn't really go through him, right? Like, he's kind of there just to finish off plays. He knows where he needs to stand, and... Yeah. But... he doesn't play a lot of games too, right? So I can kind of understand that he doesn't have as many assists, right? Like, I don't know. He is an interesting guy, and like, he's played that middle six role pretty well. Like, he always generates that depth scoring, but clearly not a playmaker.
So if I understand correctly, you're saying that he is more of a player that needs players more than a player that can help players.
Like, if we want to go football terms, I would call him a poacher, right? Like, he's there to score goals, but he's not necessarily the guy that you're going to build up the play with, right? He's going to be the guy that, you know, he's just going to be at the end of that final critical pass, right? He's just going to be there to finish off the play. Like, I don't think... Yeah, like that's how I would make my analogy, right? He's a poacher if we were talking about football. Or soccer for those people that are uncultured.
Why are you alienating our listener base like that?
I believe our audience is cultured already, and they understand that when we say football, we mean what Americans call soccer. And we've said it enough times that I think they know what we mean.
Anyways, if I understand this correctly, you're just saying Frank Vachano is basically Alex Ovechkin Jr. If I understand it correctly, right, Jeffrey? Or Mike Bossy Jr.?
No, I never said that. I was just listing guys that were more pure goal scorers that, you know, would finish off plays, but, you know, not necessarily, you know, be playmakers. And, like, I'm not going to say Vachano is the next Ovechkin. Though, I would be interested to say, would Vachano have more goals than Ovechkin at the end of the season? I think that would be an interesting debate because I don't think Ovechkin's had a really good season so far. I think, like, he definitely has single-digit goals compared to Vachano, who's got, like, what, 11, 12 goals this season already? Like, I'd be interested, end of the season, Ovechkin, Vachano, who has the most goals?
So as of today, Frank Vergano has 11 goals, and Alexander Ovechkin has one moment. We are checking 4 goals. But unlike the entirety of his career, except for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and 4 years, all in his early of his career, he has more assists than he has goals. He has 7 assists and 4 goals.
This is Ovechkin, right?
It's Ovechkin. Vetrano has 11 goals and like 4 assists from that.
Well, I feel like with Ovechkin this year especially, he hasn't really had a center that he could really like build chemistry with. I mean, like he played last year a little bit with, you know, Dylan Strome, who was kind of like the new guy in town. Kuznetsov played a little bit with him, but Backstrom has always been his main setup guy, right? And, you know, unfortunately for Backstrom, he started the season a little bit, looked okay, but then I think he decided to take a leave of absence and, you know, kind of reevaluate, you know, his career, right? Like, I don't know if he's actually significantly hurt or, you know, something happened, but, you know, he had a long injury layoff. He did some sort of like major hip surgery or back surgery. And, you know, now he's on LTIR because he just needs to kind of reevaluate. And I think that really hurts Ovechkin because, you know, how many years have they like played together? Like Backstrom setting up Ovechkin, like that was, you know, most common thing in the world. And then now with Backstrom out or having been off for so long, like I feel like Ovechkin hasn't been able to just focus on finishing plays. He's kind of almost had to be a playmaker. So we see those more assists. Like he has to help his line mates more. He's not no longer the guy who just scores goals.
Well, speaking of scoring goals, there's actually one more player that similar in that bucket, and that's Brock Besser with 13 goals this season. Which is that the league leader in scoring?
I want to say probably between him and Matthews, they're probably the two that are up there, I think. Like I can't think of anyone else that's got double digit goals besides like Matthews and Besser.
Because that team is disgusting this season, right? Like, they've got... Do you know who the league leader in scoring is right now? Like, points?
I want to say, if we're talking about the Canucks, I'm assuming JT Miller.
He is one of 3 Canucks tied for 27 points. Do you know the other two?
I will go with Pettersson and Hughes, then.
You are correct. They have 27 points each in 17 games. And the scary part, I think, is that, yeah, JT Miller is shooting 26% and Besser is shooting 27%. But Pettersson is shooting 19% and Miller 11%, which are, like, reasonable. And, like, yeah, I know scoring is up this season in NHL. I think the... like league average goaltending is like under 900 this season, but like still that's a ridiculous shooting percentage.
Well, I think with the Canucks overall, like I don't think any of us expected them to, you know, get off to this great start and also be such a like offensive team. I mean, Rick Tocchet's kind of a new coach in town for them, and he's somehow instilled some sort of confidence or belief in this team, because I think a lot of us were thinking, like, with this team, like, they were kind of going to need to reset. Like, they had Pettersson coming off his RFA, like, his bridge deal. They were kind of in a cap hell, but they weren't really going anywhere last year, right? I mean, big part of that was Demko being injured. But now, like, everything seems to be clicking for them. But, like, I still look at this roster. I'm like, this isn't a great roster. Like, how are they doing so well? Like, where's their strength? Like, how, like, I don't know, like, and there hasn't been much change from, I would say, like, last year. Like, this is pretty much the same team. Is it, like, just because they have a new coach? Has this really changed that team so much that they're playing this well?
You know what really helps?
What?
Having your starting goaltender be 8-3-0 with a 2.05 GAA and a 932 save percentage.
Yes, I am fairly well-versed in Thatcher Demko because I had him last year on my fantasy team and I targeted him. Well, I had him at the end because I knew he was a good goalie, and I knew Vancouver was bad, but he's a good goalie, and I agree. Like, Demko healthy compared to – I'm trying to think who they had last year. Like, it was, like, Spencer Martin and – I'm trying to think who their second goalie was last year. Wasn't anyone – Yaroslav Halak, maybe? No, he was in Rangers. I don't know. Like, they did not have a good goalie tandem once Demko, like – I think he was injured like early in the season too, and it was like a long injury layoff. So yeah, like Vancouver having quality goaltending, that makes a difference for sure.
Last year, the Vancouver Canucks had four goalies who played for them. Thatcher Demko played 32 games. Spencer Martin played 29 games. I think you're thinking about Colin Delia, who played 20 games. And finally, there has Arturs Silos, who played 5 games for them.
Yeah, and Colin Delia was the one I was forgetting about for sure. And Demko being back is huge.
Guess what their save percentage was last year between all four goalies?
888.
You looked that up.
Am I correct?
Yes, you are.
Oh. I knew it was below 890, and I just thought it would be fun to just go through all same three numbers. I didn't look at it, I promise. All I have right now is the cap-friendly depth chart of Vancouver Canucks. That's all I have up, I promise.
Cross Do you know what the save percentage is this year?
I'm going to say between the two goalies, like 917.
925. Casey DeSmith has a 917.
How good of a trade was that? Like, trading Tanner Pearson for Casey DeSmith, it's like worked out for both teams. Like, that's been a solid trade.
It's one of those rare win-win trades.
And like, it was a depth trade too. It wasn't like realistically like, oh, they're trading like star player for star player and they're both working. Yeah, like this was a team that needed a backup goalie, and this was a team that, you know, needed some veteran forward, and you know, it's kind of worked out for both. So honestly, I do think Vancouver probably got the better end of the deal. Like, Casey DeSmith is a solid backup, and I think when he was in the Penn system, he was bombarded a lot more and probably didn't do great. So being playing in Vancouver, being a little bit more sheltered, I think that helped him a lot.
I think it was beneficial for both. I think if the trade doesn't happen, it's fine regardless. They would have been, both teams would have been fine. Like, realistically, neither of these players are star players, right? I think we're looking at some depth players starting off really hot, and then you have your stars playing well as well. Like, do you know what Filip Ronick's projected assist total for the year is?
82? I don't know.
He's projected to score 5 goals this season and 77 assists.
Those are some good numbers. But again, we know, like, this isn't going to be sustainable, right? Like, do we believe the Vancouver Canucks are this good of a team, or are they somewhere kind of between where they ended off last season and where they are this season?
They're probably in between, but when your depth pieces are scoring well, like, you just ride the wave, right? But, like, I think through all this, one player that hasn't done well, and that I don't think... because the rest of the team is doing so well, kind of sliding through a bit better, Connor Garland. Connor Garland has 2 goals and 3 assists in 17 games.
Yeah, but he's also the guy that they're trying to get rid of, right? Like he's not a guy that they're really focusing development on or think he's going to be part of their long-term plan. So, like, he's not doing great for his potential trade value, but... like, I wouldn't, like, he's still helping the team, I would say, right? Like, he's not awful, right?
Look, when the rest of the team is that hot and he's making $4.95 million for this year and next and 2 more years after that, you are tanking your value. I'm not saying he's actively trying to tank his value, don't get me wrong, but, like, it's not helping his value. Like, he is playing himself into a healthy scratch at this rate. For comparison, everyone knows that I am the commander of the Niels Höglander fan club, and he is doing better than Connor Garland, and he is making $1.1 million this year.
Yeah, but like, is Garland healthy scratch material, or is it just that his contract doesn't reflect his production? Or like vice versa, his production doesn't reflect his contract?
I think his production probably doesn't reflect his contract. I think maybe it'd be a little dramatic there. Like, I think he's still an NHL player, but he's not performing to 4.95 million. Like, you could use that so much differently and get so much better results. You know what I mean?
Well, the main thing is that they don't care that he's being paid 4.95 this season. They care about the fact that he's paid 4.95 next season, and that's when they need to re-sign Elias Pettersson, right? So, like, I mean, I could see Garland probably they're gonna I think they're gonna as much as they want to trade him, I think you're probably gonna wait until the off season to trade him when more teams have more cap space and someone will take on that contract, and then you can use that money that you trade away, reinvest it into your Pedersen's, probably he's going to extend with the Canucks. I don't see him forcing his way out. Like, there's options, I think, with Garland. Like, ideally, if he plays better, then you're not having to give up an asset to trade him if you're Vancouver. But at the same time, you could find a trade that, like what they did with Tanner Pearson, right? Like, you traded to a team that needs a veteran forward, and you get back take back a useful depth piece. Like, I feel like there's an option there.
Is it helpful? Like, I'm sure you can do something with him, but at this rate, like, obviously we're looking too far ahead. But remember, expected 70 or 77 assist defensive Phil Hronek, also a free agent this year. Casey DeSmith, free agent this year. Like, they're gonna need a lot of cap space this year. And I don't think they have much cap space for next year, do they? They have, oh, they have 30 million, I guess, yeah. They just have to sign a lot of players. It's just really hard to kind of convince teams to take Connor Garland if he's not performing, right?
Yeah, I don't think you're gonna get equal value if you were to trade a Garland. But I mean, like, you do forget, like, Tyler Myers' contract is finally gonna expire at the end of the season too. So that's 6 million that you could use on getting that third pairing defenseman, plus reinvesting any money that you saved to, extend the Hronek or extend the Pettersson. I don't know. I think with Vancouver, this has been a very good revelation that you guys are. That they're playing so well this year, it kind of pushes off what many people thought were going might be a reset or even a rebuild, because they did trade Bo Horvat last season. Like, they traded their captain. They thought they were not going to be competitive this season, but suddenly this year they looked really well. I do think one caveat, I think, with the Garland situation, I believe he played for Tocket when they were both in Arizona, so I wonder if maybe that's why, as much as Tocchet has some control over the player, I think that he at least knows Garland, trusts Garland. I think this is going to end up being an off-season issue when teams have that more cap space. One team's going to be like, hey, we'll take Garland off of you if you give us blank. Probably what's going to happen.
So you're saying that they're probably not as screwed on the cap sense as perhaps their a local, not kind of local, but province over rival, the Edmonton Oilers?
Well, I mean, one of our friends brought up a fun fact, I guess. If Connor Brown, I guess, plays his next game, he gets a performance bonus, and but that performance bonus doesn't apply for this season; it applies for next season or something. Or I don't know the full details, but I come to think about it, maybe because I don't know, we talked about how we were too old this episode, but now.
Let me interject with that. So if Connor Brown plays 10 games this season, he gets a 3.25, I want to say, dollar bonus. And how bonuses work is that they carry over to next year. 3.225, sorry. They carry over to next year and affect next year's cap. So let's say, Jeffrey, you are an NHL player with a $2 million salary and $2 million performance bonus that you play one game in the NHL. So that's how they – remember how last year the Bruins had Patrice Bergeron, even though they had no money? What they basically did was they basically had him on a big performance bonus in their most performance-based. So then last year's cap, it wasn't really affected, but this year it's affected. So where I'm going with this is that Connor Brown – once he plays against the Lightning, which is, I think, tomorrow, he's going to be against the cap for 3.225, even if he's not on the team next year. And that is my tangent. Keep going.
Well, yeah. Well, I was just saying, like, I know we said we were old this episode, but I feel like Vancouver's biggest rival was always Edmonton, like back in the 80s, 90s. I mean, we'll see with Seattle. I think everyone thought they'd be rivals. I haven't really seen it just yet, but like in Edmonton, like they also, like, I don't know. People are always like, oh, they need to make this trade. They need to make this trade. They need to make this trade. I'm also like, but with what cap space, right? Like, I don't know. And like, they need to build a better team, but again, like, who can they trade to open up cap space, and who are they going to bring back that it's going to be of value, but doesn't take too much cap space? Like, I don't know. They're not in a good situation, both off the ice in terms of their cap situation, but also on the ice. Like, they're in a weird position.
What do you mean by a weird position? Maybe let's, for our listeners who may not have been paying attention, what happened with the Oilers this week?
Well, I mean, who ever thought that the Oilers would be playing in a tank bowl this season? Like, who thought they would be facing the Sharks to determine who would be the bottom of the Western Conference? And they lost that game. And then I don't know if they fired – I think they fired Jay Woodcroft and his associate coach after that game, or was it game after? I don't even remember. Like Jay Woodcroft got fired, which I guess is the big news you're talking about.
Yeah, it was a game. They lost to the Sharks, and there was another game, and then they got fired.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, I think at this, you had to do something. I don't think there was a trade that could have been made to help this team or give this team a boost. So I think the easiest, the simplest way out was fire the manager. Or sorry, not the manager. Fire the coach. Fire the assistant coach or associate coach or whoever he was. And, you know, see if a new voice in the locker room maybe galvanizes the squad a little bit. I mean, they did beat the Islanders in, I forgot the new coach's name, but they won it in his first game in charge. So maybe this might be turning things around. Like, I don't know. Like, I look at this team, and we all said, like, in the offseason, like, this team looked like a better team than it was last season. So why are they struggling so much? Like, I don't know. I look at this team, and I'm confused. Like, why is it just the same team as last season that was fighting at the top of the division, but this season they're fighting at the bottom of the division?
Like, what's the problem with the Oilers? I know that sounds really rude, and I'm not trying to say, but what is the Oilers' problem?
Well, I mean, goaltending is probably the easy way out. Like, they haven't been able to find consistent, good goaltending. Like we just talked about Vancouver, right? Demko coming back, that was huge. And now, you know, they went from a team that missed the playoffs to a team that probably will make the playoffs this season. Same with Edmonton. Like, I'm trying to think, who was the last consistent goaltender that they've had for, like, more than 3 years? Like, do you have a name in mind? I have a name in mind, but I don't even know if you would consider him, like, as a consistent goalie.
I want to say Cam Talbot.
Like, maybe. Like, I know he had one really good season, but, like, I almost feel like I have to go back to, like, Dwayne Rolison. Like, has it been that far back that we've had, or have the Oilers have had, like, consistent good goaltending? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm gonna see if I can bring up, like, the, like, if you went to, like, Hockey Reference or something and try to see, like, the last goalie seasons and see, like, when was the last time they've had, like, three good goalie seasons. I don't know.
So Cam Talbot had a 912, I think I saw. 912 in 4 years, was 104, 95, and 19 with a 274 GA. That's pretty solid. Like, if you want to go further back than that, then you maybe look at Dubnyk.
Yeah, maybe. Like, yeah, I guess I didn't realize how good Cam Talbot was for, like, how long. Like, I just felt like Cam Talbot, he kind of, like, fell off a cliff, too. Like, yeah, I wonder if his stats were kind of boosted from that one really good season where, like, he was almost like a Vezina candidate. Like, I don't know. Like,
I would argue Mike Smith was pretty good for that team. 56, 27, and 10 with a 9-13 and 2-7 GAA. So, yeah, I'd say Mike Smith. Like, that wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, but was that, like, long-term consistent goaltending? Like, I remember Mike Smith being the guy that you were worried that he was going to turn over the puck every single time he touched it. Like, we knew he could play the puck, but it was always, you know, a circus every time he touched it. Like, he would make an outstanding play, or he would make a boneheaded play, and he end up on the TSN not top 10 or whatever it's called.
I think, yeah, like, I guess, yeah, because Mike Smith was a bit older when this was happening, and like, when he was on the Oilers, and I guess you could say he wasn't as good, like, fine. And I think during that time, yeah, it was him and Mikko Koskinen. Koskinen was not great. They were like a tandem, but I think Cam Talbot was a reasonable goalie for that team. Like, when he was playing for the Oilers, like, he had a 42-win season, you know? Like, what do you want?
Yeah, well, I think more it's like, you don't want... I think if you're Oilers, like, you don't want one-hit wonders, right? You want someone that's, like, stable at the back. And, you know, they thought they were going to get it with Jack Campbell after coming over from the Leafs. Like that contract that he signed was announced on social media, like, days before it was actually July 1st when he did sign it, right? Like, that was such a contract that everyone knew, oh, he's going to get 5x5 with the Oilers. And look how that turned out. He's currently playing with the Bakersfield Condor, I think, right? Like, I don't know. I think that's the problem with the Oilers. Like, they just haven't been able to find any semblance of good goaltending when they want to be competitive, right? Like, you have McDavid, you have Dreisaitl, like, you have, like, pretty good defense, I would say, maybe. I mean, your depth is not always going to be great, but that's every team, right? But your goaltending, you need to have consistent, even, like, decent goaltending. Like, they don't need amazing goaltending, just steady, decent goaltending, and they would be fine.
Like, I would argue that the Oilers, like, with Jack Campbell, it's more of a mental game, right? Like, you're probably struggling a little bit, you know, off the ice, trying to, like, get through it. But I'm not going to speculate that. Like, but, yeah, at the end of the day, let's look at numbers, because that's what's most objective. Goaltending is a problem. Like, we mentioned, what was Thatcher Demko's save percentage? 923, 9032, something like that?
Something around there, yeah.
Yeah, like, Stuart Skinner is at 880, and then I think Jack Hamill was at 873. Like, that's a bad tandem they have there. And, you know, would you say McDavid's having a rougher year, that he only has 4 goals and 9 assists in 13 games? He only has 13 points in 13 games?
Well, I think that injury early in the season kind of threw him off. Like, yeah, like, I think him not scoring is a little bit, you know, interesting, right? Like we know he's a playmaker. He can set up his line mates and stuff, but he's always been in some that would, you know, also score goals too, right? So I would say it's kind of surprising when he has 4 goals. Like, I'm okay with his assist totals. I think it's the goals that are kind of surprising. Like, I wonder, is his shooting percentage probably, like, way below his normal average, is my guess. Like I would probably say he's probably hit, like, maybe he's a career average of, like, 13 maybe, but this year he's probably half that. Maybe he's like a 6.5.
So Connor McDavid has averaged a shooting percentage of 15.4% in his career. This year he is at 10%, which is actually the lowest of his career.
Yeah, like, I'm not surprised by those numbers that you just said. Like, I just think with the Oilers, they just haven't found a rhythm. Like, once everything connects, I think they're going to be a really good team. McDavid's going to be playing well. Goaltending is going to be like decent. They're going to, you know, make a run, but it's just that something's not clicking for them. And it's hard to know why. Like, I don't know. I look at this team. I'm like, this team is objectively better than the team last year. How come they aren't playing at the same level as they were last year? Like, something must have happened. Maybe it's the pressure has finally caught up to everyone, being like, hey, Edmonton has always been the most likely Canadian franchise to win the cup out of all the Canadian teams. And, you know, maybe it's finally caught up where they're like, hey, like, you know, we're not that good. Like, we can't, you know, deal with this pressure. Or even the fact that, hey, like, Draisaitl only has 1 year left on his contract. McDavid only has 2 years left on his contract. Like, what's going to happen now? Like, what if we don't win? Like, are they going to resign? Like, I wonder if all of that mounting pressure has caught up with Edmonton and they're kind of in, they kind of created their own mental block.
At what point do you consider getting rid of Ken Holland?
I want to say his contract expires at the end of this year. So I think, like, if you're going to get rid of Ken Holland, it's cheaper to wait until the end of his contract. But I do think that if you're really considering, like, you feel like you need a change now, do it early so that whoever's the next, like, GM, they can do the draft, they can, you know, talk with their star players and set out, like, a vision for this team. Like, I feel like that they're not going to fire Ken Holland. I think they're just going to let him be, see what happens, and then at the end of the season, just start anew. But, again, they've already done the first step of firing the head coach. I feel like with the GM, it's going to happen, but I feel like that's probably going to be, again, an off-season issue.
But can you risk letting another year go by? There's not that many chances left before, you know, like, Draisaitl says, I'm just not going to re-sign here.
Well, I mean, like, you have to kind of look and see, like, I'm just trying to see, like, I feel like this season would have been the best season to, like, win. Like, I'm just trying to, like, look in terms of cap space, right? Like, this year, they don't have really any cap space. Next year, they have about $14 million, but that's also the fact that they've got quite a few players that need to sign, right? Like, I don't know. Like, if you really think this is the season that you're going to be, this is going to be your best season, then I think you do make that switch in Holland. But if you feel like, okay, next season you still have a good chance, then maybe you're okay waiting to make that GM switch.
So, what's your final answer?
I may or may not have forgotten the question.
When does he get fired?
I'm going to say no. He gets let go. Or they don't renew his contract, whatever you want to call it.
Okay, what's the difference between firing and let go?
Well, firing, I assume that you get a severance package, right? Like, if they fire him before the end of his contract, you get some sort of severance, is my assumption. And that's why I think that's the more costly answer, isn't it? Like if I don't know, you tell me. Like, if my contract was to end December 31st, 2023, but you fire me December 1st, 2023, do you owe me for that 1 month of me being fired? Like, I don't know. What you know these things a little bit more than me, I would assume.
Can you confirm to me what you're trying to say is that he basically just won't get his contract renewed? Is that, yes, what you're trying to say?
Yes.
Okay, I understand you now. I'm just like, okay. He won't get his contract renewed. Okay. Do you worry at all that he ends up just causing Draisaitl to leave, because Draisaitl gets a message that, oh yeah, we're not really taking it seriously?
Well, I think that if the Oilers continue to be this bad, like, they are not in good shape at all this season. Like, if they can't, like, by New Year's, if they can't rebound, I think you almost have to call it a lost season. Where you might even consider, okay, let's try to get some assets so that we can compete next year. Kind of like what the Lightning did that year Stamkos got injured, where they're like, okay, you know, we're not going to be great. We're not going to be, you know, a playoff contender. We might make the playoffs, but, you know, we're missing Stamkos. Like, I wonder if they might just take, like, an off year and then really go for it next year and see what Draisaitl thinks. Like, I do agree with you. Like, Draisaitl, like, these guys all want to win, and they're going to try to find the best opportunities for them to win. And, you know, right now, Edmonton does not look like a good place to win the cup, right? So, I think if you're Edmonton and you're that management team, you need to somehow sell them on the perspective that if they don't do well this year, they're going to try really, really hard next season. And that's going to start with either at the NHL trade deadline or somewhere along the line.
What about the radical move of trading Leon Draisaitl?
Well, they might be short on cap space with that Connor Brown thing, so they might need to open up some cap space. Maybe trading Draisaitl isn't the worst thing in the world. Joking aside, I don't think you can trade Draisaitl because there's no way you're going to get equal value back if you're Edmonton, right? Because if you're trading Draisaitl now, does that not mean that you might as well trade McDavid, right? What's the point of keeping Draisaitl what's the point of trading Draisaitl but not trading McDavid as well, right? Like, unless the return to game back for Draisaitl is like a young star player that kind of is also kind of in the same line as McDavid's, you know, competing era, and like you're building up more depth in your team, fine. But like, if you're trading Draisaitl for picks and young prospects, what's the point of keeping McDavid?
Take the hint of what I'm insinuating here, Jeffrey.
What, like a full-blown rebuild?
Maybe. I know you're not going to get equal value for McDavid, but what if perhaps?
Well, let's play this out. Okay, what team or what would be an offer for Draisaitl? Like, I assume you're going to be looking for, like, even though if you're going to rebuild, you still need a young player. So, like, I'm assuming that you're going to want a young player either on a rookie contract or someone that has like a bridge deal, like someone young. I don't know. Let's pull a Trevor Zegras out of here because he's not doing so well in Anaheim. Like, I assume like you're going to want like a top young forward or a top young defenseman. You're probably going to need some salary cap filler and then a bunch of picks. Does that sound about right for Draisaitl?
What if this is going to blow the hockey world's brains? Draisaitl and someone like Ryan McLeod for Mitch Marner in a second.
I feel like Dubois... Oh, I hinted on something. That's what I was going to go for. I think with that Marner and Draisaitl commercial, I think they're two good buds that they don't want to be traded for each other. They want to play on the same team. Maybe a Nylander? I mean, Nylander's got less...
Well, how would you get the money to work? That's the big one.
Well, if you think about it, right? Like, Nylander for Draisaitl. Well, like, I think it's going to be, like, in terms of, like, actual money, I think it's going to be, like, matching money. Is that how you'd call it? Like you're not going to have, like, some team's not going to be getting, like, $3 million more after the trade, right? But, like, I could see, you know, like, probably be next year, I think, if you're the Leafs, right? Like, Draisaitl's got money. Like, you're going to have to figure a way to give up. This is all hypothetical. Draisaitl and McLeod for Marner a second, I think, is... Edmonton would not do that trade. And I think if you're the Leafs, why do you need a third center?
Because why not?
Well, I mean, if you're shifting Tavares to the wing, I don't know about... I don't know. Like, do you put Draisaitl with Matthews? Probably not, but, like, then you don't have your primary, like, playmaker on the wing. Like, do you do Nylander and Matthews? Like, my guess was if you're, say, a team like LA.
Oof. You have my attention here.
Dubois signed long-term, which is appealing to Edmonton because he's going to sign it. Like a lower cap hit than whatever Draisaitl is going to be. He's going to be a second line center, right? Like he's not going to be like someone that's going to, you know, he seems to be like he would fit into the role of a top end second line center better than where he is with LA right now. And then maybe add in a couple prospects, maybe a couple first round picks for Dreisaitl and something. Like, I think that's probably a little bit more reasonable because, like, if you're LA, right? Like, you look at your team, Kopitar's getting older, Doughty's getting older, like, those contracts, like, maybe that might be the move. Like, I could see that actually. I like that trade actually. Dubois and stuff for Dreisaitl.
Can't call people stuff. They're people too, Jeffrey.
Sorry. Dubois and additional assets that are currently the property of the LA Kings.
Okay. And I think that is a banger of a final statement from Jeffrey because I gotta go. So let's have some final thoughts.
I think we still need to figure out the McDavid trade. I think that's going to be our homework for us and our homework for our audience. What is a proper trade for McDavid? And you can also give us comments. Are any of our Dreisaitl potential trades even realistic, or do you have some other trade ideas for us? So that's my final thought.
All right. My final thought is I can't top Jeffrey's banger, so I'm going to have to leave it at that. And with that, we'll see you in a couple weeks then. Love y'all. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network. You want to complain about us? You can tweet us at BOP_POD on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.